podcast. Thank you, everybody who watched our last podcast. We really appreciate all the wonderful messages and comments that everybody gave us. So we decided to do it again because we like to talk video games, right? And we've got an absolutely awesome episode for you today. Before we start, I'd like to thank Voice, who made our awesome intro music. So awesome. We love you, Voice. Thank you very much. And I want to introduce you to our all-female panel here today. So first off, we got Kat SD.
Hello.
We got Kat Ashley.
Hello.
We've got Allie.
Hey.
We got Steffi.
Hi.
And we've got a very, very, very special guest, none other than Jason Acevedo, who is public relations manager from Ubisoft Entertainment. Hey, Jay, thanks for joining us.
Hey, hello. Thanks for having me.
So this has been a crazy couple of months for Ubisoft. So many games launched, but today we want to talk about The Crew because it only came out a few days ago. And very first question right off the bat, and ladies, jump in whenever you feel like it, is what made you guys want to jump into the car driving game MMO scene right off the bat? Because it's been a little while, I think 2006 since the last time I saw a racing game from Ubisoft.
Yeah, no, that's correct. I think everything started with our team at Ivory Tower in France, Lyon, to be more specific. So we had guys that have been working on the Atari Test Drive Unlimited brand for several years. So when they branched out, they got together and started this Ivory Tower studio. Their idea, their goal was to take whatever they've learned on making test drive games and see where the industry was going, and decided to create this massive, ambitious project, obviously, which is it's an MMORPG, but with cars. So it's been the game director's dream to do it, and he assembled a very talented team to do so. And after 5 years of development, and hardcore discussions and changes and fixes and ideas, we finally launched the game on December 2nd.
Awesome. Now, RPG, MMO, driving game? What makes it an RPG?
I think when everybody wants to play an RPG is having that freedom, right? The luxury of customizing your avatar to your liking, which in this case here is not a character, it's actually a car. And we know that there's a lot of car aficionados out there. If you take the racing genre category, there's been a lot of great racing games, and there's a community that it's avid, that it's just, can't get enough of racers. So I think the idea is to just keep expanding a genre that has been having good games, but the racing fans, aside from the Gran Turismos and the Forzas, it's pretty standard in terms of other racing. So to offer this opportunity to create a game that is completely new in a sense, but also takes a lot of elements that exist out there to make it happen, and to be out there and to see actually genuinely people being excited to the fact to take this car and have 20 different ways to customize it with thousands of final results. So I think the exciting part of it is show what you are in terms of like your personality, and then put it into a car and then drive it across the United States coast to coast. So it has a feel to it. It's exciting. It's enticing. It's sexy in a way when you know what you're doing. No, but listen, in real life, I'm not a car person. But when I play racing games, I really want to have a kick-ass car, right? Like it has to be cool. It has to have some swagger, some colors, and it has to be cool, right? So this game, that's what it's giving you, the freedom to explore, but also the freedom to show your personality as a racer.
That's really cool because, I know my car, anytime I buy a car, I end up naming it. They're always girls. They're always girls. But yeah, definitely, people's personalities are for sure shown in their cars. You mentioned the continental U.S. driving from coast to coast. That's huge. Why'd you guys decide to go, balls to the wall right off the bat?
Well, I think the team got inspired by the new technology. Right. I don't know if you guys remember playing Test Drive Unlimited back then, but it was one of the few MMORPGs of the racing genre on consoles and PC. And, you know, you could already drive from one city to another. And, you know, even if you take the Gran Turismo or Forza and you're like numbering, right? And then you can drive that for an hour, right? I mean, I think the idea of bringing that experience into this game was definitely there, but also the fact that it's open world, right? And when you say those two words in a conversation about gaming, people want open world. Like, they want the freedom to go whatever the hell they want. They see a mountain over there, they want to go to the mountain, right? And then when the game actually lets you go there, then, you know, it blows your mind, but also realizes, like, oh my God, I can really do this, right? So it's cool that the gaming industry has this little moments where, you know, companies and talented development teams can still surprise you. So I think that's what these guys wanted to do. And when you say coast to coast, right, you in the game, I think it's something like 95 minutes that takes you from east, you know, to coast in real time, like 95 minutes coast to coast. So, you know, I know that at first they wanted to do longer, but then obviously they had to, you know, tone it down a little bit, but still 95 minutes. It's, you know, can you drive for 95 minutes with a controller and really keep the pace? You know, but some people do. And now you can do it with your friends, with a lot of people, either friends that you know, randoms that you cross, you know, pass with on the server or whatever, right? So when you add the social aspect of it, then it becomes a mammoth experience.
That 95-minute drive, like, that's kind of wild. And all the reviews that aren't even out yet because of the fact that this is a massive multiplayer online game. And we're still in the midst of writing our review. Even the other big sites are still, they're doing stuff in progress. Yeah. There's a crazy amount of content in this game.
There is. And, you know, to fully experience the game and really say, okay, I think I've seen enough to give my opinion on it, you know, we calculate around 30 to 40 hours of gameplay.
How much total gameplay? Because I've, like, my stats that I've been figuring out, there's about 20 hours of single player. There's tons of side missions, and some of them last 1 hour. Some can last 2.5 hours. So how many hours, if you wanted to, like, line it up top to bottom, do you think there are?
I mean, we're talking MMORPG at this point. So, you know, whenever you go into the hundreds of hours of experience, then it's when you know that, you know, you've accomplished your open world idea. But it's still 40 hours, you know, like when you play games like Fallout or Skyrim, you know, if you really want to do the story and not do anything else, it takes you around that, right? 30 to 40 hours. But the problem with open world games, and it's a sweet problem to have, is, you know, you stick here, you're doing this, and all of a sudden you see a little flag over there, and then you go, and then you see someone else over there, he challenged you to a race, and all of a sudden, you know, boom, there you go. It's like, oh yeah, I was supposed to do that 5 hours ago. You know? So that's the cool, and to me, open world games, we're lucky at Ubisoft to have that knowledge, right? Because you start to start talking about the crew, but, you know, look at what the teams have been doing with Assassin's Creed, with Far Cry, you know, mm-hmm. several, the technology is there, so that's pretty cool.
Sweet. Before I get into more questions, ladies, do you have anything for Jay?
Yeah, I want to know, in the crew, which type of cars do you like driving? I'm partial to the racing cars. I want to go fast.
And you know what? I consider myself someone that has a little bit of style. So I don't like the big cars. I like those, like, slick, you know, nice McLarens or, you know, Lambos. You know, like, it has to have some type of, you know, cool European style to it. You know, I'm a big fan of Fast and the Furious, so I tried to look at those, like, sweet cars that you can race around, so I like those.
Was Fast and the Furious and other car movies, inspiration behind the game?
That's a good question. I think that comes down to what the dev guys are doing, right? Like, it's funny because I know a lot of people in development and not just at Ubisoft, and it's funny because when they spend so much time working on those games, they add their own flavor without even thinking about it, and then they realize after it's like, oh yeah, I did that, you know. So I think it comes down to their moods, their liking, and then they add something and inspiration. I don't know. You know, when I look at when I first heard about the crew, and I saw, I don't know if you ladies remember our E3 trailer when, you know, the car pieces were assembling themselves, and then everybody was racing in the streets.
Yeah.
I had a feeling of Gone for 60 Seconds. Like, I love that movie. I
love that movie.
So when I saw that trailer, I was like, wow, this is like fast paced Nicolas Cage action. You know? So it was good, right? So, I mean, to each his own.
Well, I know just after coming out of something like Fast and Furious, or any of those car movies where people are driving, like, all you want to do is get behind the wheel of your car and drive like a maniac,
right,
and drive like a maniac with your friends. So right. It's very appropriate to finally have a video game that does that.
That's right. That's correct.
True story. I worked in a movie theater in my teens, and the first Fast and Furious movie is the most accidents we've had in our parking lot. Just saying.
That's wild. Yeah, they should put a disclaimer at the beginning and the end of those movies saying these are professional stunt people with, like, you know, like safety belts and airbags and stuff, and don't try this at home, because, yeah, I'm sure, like, the accident reports after the launch of one of those movies is ridiculous.
Just like when you start playing a video game, that's what you get as well, right? You get that little disclaimer. Do not try this in real life.
Yeah, exactly. You cannot drift in real life.
What do you mean I can't?
Hell no.
If you hit a
from
pole,
a building into
it's
a
not
haystack.
Just going to bounce. Because, yeah, I'm actually a really terrible video game driver, and to the point where I was playing Watch Dogs, and I was showing it to my dad because I was like, oh my god, look at these graphics. It's going to blow your mind. And I got in the car and started driving, and my dad's like, you're terrible. So yeah, my real life driving is nothing like my video game driving, because in video games there's like poles and people and other cars going everywhere.
That's you know, I thought I was a good driver, only to the point where my Forza Drivatar showed the whole world that I'm a terrible driver. So, I was like, god damn you, Turn 10 Studios, you're showing all my weakness. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Oh, my. Technology, but honestly, like, you're shaming me right now.
Public shaming all the time, and you don't even have to be there.
But I get credits.
That's true.
I should be getting money. It's like, hey, you drive like an asshole. Please give us our money back.
So we got we're getting to experience a little bit of Troy Baker in this game, because he plays the lead character, Alex Taylor. It's really cool. Is this the first time we've had Troy Baker in a Ubisoft game?
No, he was actually Pagan Min in Far Cry.
That's right! Oh my god, how did I forget that?
I don't know.
Jeez Louise!
my boy Troy is keeping busy, and
hey.
It was cool. It was cool to have him on Ubisoft this year, so it's cool.
Yeah, and such different characters.
Yeah.
Holy cow!
He's a very talented voice actor. Like, if he was in Shadow of Mordor, and, you know, like, his voice and tone. He was on Last of Us, and he was Joker, I think, like, last year, I think he was. So, yeah, I mean, gotta love those voice actors, right? They're so talented, and, yeah, it's cool. They keep getting work, right? So that's because they're good.
Well, and you don't recognize him in any of the games. He's able to transform himself so magically.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Ladies, you got any more questions there?
For the crew, I'm good.
Crew-wise, I haven't really played much of it yet, so.
All right, cool. Well, I got another one.
Blasphemy.
I got another one. She was in school.
Hey, okay. Yeah, this is my second day off.
and we thank you for being with us tonight.
Very well.
The navigation in the crew. This is the first time that I've actually seen the navigation being in the sky instead of on the road. What was the reasoning behind that?
Again, that's a total creative choice, right? Mm. So, I mean, just change it up, I guess. Honestly, I can't really comment on it, but it's always fun when these devs, you know, spend those time analyzing menus and see what they can be done, right? I remember when I played Skyrim for the first time, and Todd Howard show me, you know, how you could go, you know, look at the sky, and then you can look at, and I was like, wow, that, like, whoever thought of this should get a raise, right? So, that's why these guys are amazing, and I have this respect for them, right? It's, they think about those things countless times, and then they come up with all these menus, and it's funny that you notice, because, you know, most of the time people take menu UI for granted, right? But there's so much work put into those things that it's fun, it's cool when you hear people say, I saw that and it was pretty cool. It's like, hey, you know, I'm going to tell that to the guy, work on it, right? So now it's, I would say, hours of discussions and probably heated discussions, but at the end of the day, they managed to pull something cool, right?
So. Well, we really appreciate it, and Kat, SD, and I are both graphic designers, so it's actually something that I see a lot in all of Ubisoft's games, is how nice the UI and the type choices and the graphic design elements and how the usability is really, really there. Like, it's super functional, so. Yeah, and we see that we're like, ooh, we know that type.
Yeah, right. No, but like I said, again, you know, like, there's little things in video games that people take for granted that you don't realize that there's actually a lot of thought and work put onto it, right? So.
And I think, like, if people don't notice it right away, it's maybe because you've done your job right, because I've never heard people comment on good UI outside of people that actually look for it, but people that don't notice UI will always complain about a crappy UI. So if you mess up these kinds of elements, people will bash you and they will notice, but if you do it well to the point where I didn't even notice I was following this line, it was just like second nature, then you've done your job, in my opinion.
Yeah.
Sweet. I think that's all the questions I have for the crew right now, because, as I said, we're still knees deep in it. Ladies, do you have anything else before we move on to the next topic? No? Cool. All right, so the next one's a little different. We want to talk about, because we're kind of doing, like, year roundups now. I mean, it's December. It's that time of the year. We look back. We reflect. So, Jay, we want to know, what has been your favorite moment of 2014? Be it working at Ubisoft or just professionally, video game wise, what are your highlights from this past year?
Okay, so for Ubisoft, I think for me, having a year where I get to do PR for Assassin's Creed, Far Cry, two new IPs in The Crew and Watch Dogs, and South Park, right? When you take those and then you're like, you know, I have to rep those games, right? I have to work on them and communicate on them and launch those games in the country. You know, to me that's again, it's a big highlight, but to me that's something that I really, really consider myself lucky. So for me that's the highlight. And it's funny because it didn't hit me until the Canadian Video Game Awards a couple of days ago. When I actually saw, you know, Child of Light, Far Cry Blood Dragon, Watch Dogs, Assassin's Creed, those games winning awards, and then people were just messaging me and said, hey, Ubisoft is doing pretty well at the show, you must be proud. And then I was like, yeah, because I kind of forgot about that. I was like, yeah, no, you're right. And then I was like, yeah, I did launch Child of Light, and yeah, that's right, Blood Dragon, and all that, because the awards were 2013 and 14, so it was kind of like a compressed version of all those games. So, yeah, so that kind of said, like, my God, like, I've been launching all those games for a year and a half, right? So it's kind of cool. So for this year, I think that's my highlight is that, at Ubisoft anyways, it's launching all those games and, you know, yeah, being proud of it, so that's cool. The industry, I think, the fact that these new consoles are entering their second year, and there's a lot of things that have happened, you know, in terms of development, in terms of all the discussions, and what Microsoft is doing, whatever Sony and Nintendo's kind of rising all their ashes a little bit with Smash Bros. And all those crazy titles that they released this year. So it's to see that, you know, we're in year two, and the year that it's coming, it's going to be just as awesome, if not, you know, more, right? So, and the industry, I think that's something that really, I think, for me, is the highlight. It's to see that these companies are And when I say these companies, I'm talking obviously those who make consoles, right? It's to see them learning from their, you know, year zero and then adapting themselves to the market and then keep coming with other ways to keep their customers happy, but also attract new ones, right? You know, the Twitch era, it's definitely in full front right now. And to see that these consoles are embracing it in terms of real-time, you know, content and engagement, all that stuff, it's definitely a fun times for the industry, even though it's not as, you know, rainbows and unicorns and everybody's having fun, because the industry is always a rough one. We're living in a really rough industry. But it's to see all those things being coming together. I think that's a highlight, 2014, right? It's after, what, like 8 years, I think, the last console cycle was?
Yeah.
So, yeah, you know, it's like it's been a long time. So to see that happening, it's very exciting. At least the future is really exciting. So.
It's really cool because in some cases, there's certain things about games that have come out in the past year that feel next-gen, but they're not there quite yet, which only means that we're going to get there starting next year, starting the next round of games come out. Not to say that there hasn't been good games that come out this year. It's just that there's those little things that we're just getting a taste yet because the consoles are in their infancy. They're babies. So yeah, the next few years are going to be really cool, and you see bits and pieces of that, which is really neat, and it's exciting to see what's going to come out of Ubisoft and everywhere and everyone else in the near future. Yeah, so with that being said, we'd like to talk about what's coming up in 2015 for Ubisoft. I know myself, I would love to see another Child of Light. That thing was fantastic.
Yeah, Patrick Plourde's team would really, really hit a home run on that one. So, so yeah, I mean, it's, yeah, I would love to.
You're like, I can't talk about it.
I would love to. No, but listen, I mean, I'm a gamer, right? So you can throw as many games at me as possible, and, you know, I'm going to play them, I'm going to enjoy them, right? So, but, yeah, Child of Light was one of those success stories within the company that was cool, right? So, yeah.
Well, I think it's good news that Alex Hutchinson just got the clearance to do his own little project now that he's done Far Cry 4. Like, I think he saw the success of Child of Light, which turned a profit in the end, and now he's got the go-ahead, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, and again, it comes back to what I was saying earlier, right? Like, we are super lucky to have those creative minds at Ubisoft, right? So, you know, Alex, you know, I've known Alex for several years now, you know, he's been doing so many cool games. My favorite, actually, that's more of, yeah, I guess so. My favorite game that he's made outside of Ubisoft was Army of Two, the 40th day. And that was a cool game for me. So, you know, he worked on that game, and then he worked on Assassins, and he worked on Far Cry. And, yeah, you know, it's cool that now he gets to, you know, keep digging and creating new things. So it's cool.
It's neat, too, to see how the thought process and style and engines and everything go from even as a test case with Child of Light, and then you get to see inklings of it in Valiant Hearts: A Great War, and then even now in DLC that's coming for Assassin's Creed with the China edition, which is 2D, and I'm super stoked about that because the second time around we're going to get to see a female assassin.
Yeah.
So it's really, really nice to see how that learning process is carrying through and getting to watch that. Ladies, do you have any comments or anything right now?
Well, I just wanted to know, actually, were you guys really surprised by Child of Light's success? Or was it expected? Or?
So I'm going to talk to you as PR, as I am, because I'm not in development, right? So when I see the game the first time, I'm like, this is really interesting. And then you get to meet Patrick Plourde, and then you sit down, and then you have a discussion. And he's like, he believes, obviously, each creator believes in its project, right? And it's super psyched. But it's when you sit down in front of them, and they talk to you, and they're like, okay, yeah, that's very interesting. And then you're like, okay, you know, you let it sim a little bit. And then you play it for the first time, and you're like, holy crap, right? Like, it's something.
Yeah.
My first experience with Child of Light, and this is true story. I load the build, and then, you know, the menu pops up, and then the music starts playing, and I kid you not, I sat there for 20 minutes listening to the soundtrack alone. I didn't even press start yet, like, I'm not starting the game, and the soundtrack carried me and actually relaxed my body. And then I was like, this is beautiful music. I'm liking this music. And then I go get my, you know, my little SpongeBob thing, you know, and then I'm like, this is cool. And then I just lie on my couch and I'm just listening to the soundtrack and I'm like looking at the ceiling. I'm like, wow, like this is great. And I'm like, okay, I probably should start playing now.
Bird right? of Your Eyes did such a good job. Wow, it's, you
know,
gorgeous.
And then you press start, and then you have this, like, you know, storytelling that gets you in the first minute, and you're already in that mood. It's like my head was into this world already because mm-hmm. of the music, and then I was like, hey, I don't know where I'm at right now, but I'm having fun. This is great. And then is when I understood, like, wow, this is a gem, right? But like I said, when the creator talks to you about it, he sold it as in, he believes in it. And I think that's the challenge of each producer, creative director, whatever the case or whatever the position is that they want to sell you that idea. They want to sell you that world, right? And I think that they knew that they had something great. We all knew that there was something great, but to know that it was much more than that, that I think caught a lot of people by surprise, including obviously myself. So because I was like, wow, Dad, this is going to be a hit. This is going to be amazing. A JRPG type of game out of Ubisoft, and then people are going to dig this. And then you're like, no, people are really going to dig this.
Well, I think it's the combat system that really, and the turn-based system that was really innovative too, on top of everything else, that, like, the mechanic itself really got you into the game. Once you figured that out, at first it was a little jarring because you're like, I don't understand the whole timeline, but then once you figured out how things flowed and how your turn came up, it was really, really intriguing.
Yeah, and again, you know, it's a JRPG-inspired game out of Ubisoft, which also that is like, wait, what? To the same level when you said, you know, Ubisoft in a racing game, you know? Like, so that just shows again how diversified we are, and it's really cool. It's really cool. So I think it's cool to see Child of Light winning awards, and it's, you know, to get that credibility, and Patrick Plourdenard is working on another project as well. So, you know, it's, yeah, I mean, I was pleasantly surprised by the reaction, but there was part of me that said, yeah, this is cool, but, you know, it's so niche, you know, well, people are going to play it and understand it and whatever, so, but they pulled it off, so.
Oh, I know that the soundtrack is up for VGX tomorrow evening, and I believe it's up for another award as well, so best of luck
And the cool thing about the soundtrack is that it was made in Montreal by a Quebec artist that is Charlie Pirat, right? So to see that, you know, being recognized in the U.S. and being recognized worldwide is also a big win for her and for the team and for Ubisoft Montreal, right? So it's really cool. And that's a really cool soundtrack. Like, the soundtrack, you could go to Archambault and you can go to HMV and actually buy the soundtrack there. Which, you know, when was the last time you saw a video game soundtrack that you could go buy at a store? When was the last time? I think the last time was, you know, Killer Cuts from Killer Instinct. And that actually came with the game. And then it got re-released afterwards. So it's been a long time. And, I mean, even if you do research after the podcast, and probably there's another one, but I don't remember. So,
well, it's interesting too, because where we work in at the radio station, and, you know, people just think all the nerds or whatever are going out to go cover a video game, and then we let the folks know, especially at Rouge and our fellow French radio stations, we're like, we're gonna go interview Curta Pirat right now. She just scored a video game. They were like, what? So it's like breaking down barriers even on that front.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that she's able to get in and make such a fantastic soundtrack to a game that's equally as fantastic.
And it's a great soundtrack. Like, it's one of those soundtracks that takes you and brings you to somewhere, right? Like, It's one of those soundtracks that are as good in your office when you're working, and that soundtrack could play in that neuro spa place, and it'll be just as good.
What I love about this soundtrack too is like it's very tied to the game, and if you've played the game, you listen to it and you get the game. But also, I had a quick listen with Jason Rockman at Chome, who's a huge Cœur de Pirate fan, and I like made him listen to the main track where she actually sings on it, and mm-hmm. he was like, "Oh, it's a video game, but like I would just listen to this because I'm a fan of Cœur de Pirate," mm-hmm. and I was really impressed how she scored a game, yet it sounded like her, yet it sounded like Ubisoft. It was a really nice synergy, and I'm really hoping to see more of those types of things, like Child of Light, which was like a small team at Ubisoft that had a great idea. They talked to Cirque du Soleil, they talked to Cœur de Pirate, to local talent, got the right talent they needed, and with a small team made something amazing. And is it something you would like to do more in the future, these like little tiny dream teams that just push through and makes magic?
I mean, again, I'm not in development, but I hope so, you know? Personally, I never met Cœur de Pirate, but I got to meet her very briefly when the game launched. And that was like, you know, the team decided to work with her and they did a soundtrack. The other experience that I had was with Blood Dragon. So Dean Evans, working on that game, one of his childhood heroes was Michael Biehn, right? The actor. And he's like, hey, I'm going to try to get this guy to work on my game. Then Michael Biehn accepted, and here we are, Blood Dragon, 80s type of inspired shooter with Michael Biehn. And then I didn't get the chance of meeting Michael Biehn, but I do have my Blood Dragon poster signed by him, right? By Kyle Reese.
Awesome.
Signed my poster, you know? So I think it comes down to these experiences when people are like so excited to work on their project and like, you know, let's do something cool. Let's get this person and whatever. And then these people agree to work on that, right? So I don't think it does happen just to Ubisoft though. I mean, if you look at the industry overall, I'm pretty sure that, you know, and I think the greatest example is Raphael, which I don't remember his last name. He's doing that that game, The Long Dark. I gave money to this guy to make this game because it was super cool. And then he got like Mark Meer, Jennifer Hale to work on in Last Effects, you know, like. So I think you see that in the industry very often when creative people are making these games and like, you know what, it will be fun if this person makes this game. And it's part of a project, and then it happens, right? So we're lucky, and I think Cœur de Pirate and Michael Biehn are probably, you know, the quickest examples that comes to mind at Ubisoft. But I mean, there's several other experiences for sure, and across the industry, right? So I hope that we keep doing that, right? But for me, I find out very late into the development process who's part of these games, and they're like, holy crap, this is amazing. Like, yay.
Speaking of awesome soundtracks, that Blood Dragon soundtrack by Power Glove.
Right.
Holy smokes, that thing is the shit.
I have a vinyl of it.
The pink one?
Yeah, the pink one. Like, they made a limited edition, and then I got lucky, and I got one. So it's like,
one
wow.
day, you have to come by Shawm, and we have to spin that.
You know what? Yes.
That'll be hilarious. Sure, Classic sure Vinyl Rockman, Sunday, sure turned on its head.
I'm sure that Rockman would appreciate that. That's actually a great idea.
We'll make that happen.
Let's do it.
All right, cool. So we just celebrated, as gamers, the 20th anniversary of the PlayStation 1, which is really cool because, you know, that was the birth of a lot of our gaming experiences. And since we're all here together, I want us all to go around and talk about our wonderful PlayStation memories. And I mean, I know some of us didn't play PlayStation 1, maybe played the 2 or 3. Any memory counts? Tell me your favorite moment of dealing with PlayStation. And let's start with Jay.
No, I don't want to go first.
You don't want to go first?
No, I want to hear the other lady's stories.
Okay. Cat SD, what do you got?
For me, PlayStation is really the JRPGs, and it was having shared games with my friend Guillaume, and we played all of Chrono Trigger, just like passing the remote. And just like he would play 30 minutes an hour, we would go get a snack, then I would play, and then yeah, it took us forever to finish that game, but it was like it was our game and it was together and it was awesome. And when we weren't together, I was playing, like, let's say Final Fantasy VIII, and then he was playing something else, and then when we would get back together, we would talk about the games we just played where I was in Final Fantasy VIII, and then I would give him tips on nine, and then we would play, sit down and pass the bayonet and play Chrono Trigger. So those are some of my best memories. And also introducing my friends to the Dynasty Warrior. My friend Uva didn't like video games, but I had Dynasty Warrior, and it was just like, you have this kick-ass Asian lady, and she swings around her weapons, and you just kill a bunch of soldiers, and it's just like, during exam season, she was like, I need to come over and just kill a bunch of people. And I was like... connecting second controller, and we would just swing and just have a ball and have cookies, and then we would fall asleep and wake up and do some homework.
So it's funny that you mentioned Chrono Trigger, but I may get this wrong, but Chrono Trigger was one of the few multi-disc games on PlayStation. I think it was something like five discs, I think it was, yeah.
Something epic.
Did I get it wrong? Is it Chrono Cross that was on PlayStation and Chrono Trigger was on the NES?
It was Chrono Trigger. They came out with like a special edition afterwards on the PlayStation that I think combined both the Final Fantasy and Chrono Trigger.
Yes, I think, was it Chrono Trigger only in Japanese?
Yeah.
I think the first one, right?
I think it was the sequel that we played.
It was on Nintendo, but... sound is out.
Oh yeah, I couldn't hear you there.
Anyway, we played the sequel, and I think it's Chrono Cross, the one where you're on the beach and you traverse to another world, and the music was amazing. Yeah, and it was one of the first video game soundtrack I got was the Chrono Cross soundtrack, because it was so good.
Yeah, it's good times.
Kat, how about you?
I don't have any sound right now.
No, I hear you. Oh, you don't hear us?
Oh, wait, no, say it again. I see your mouth moving. Oh, okay, I hear you.
What's your favorite PlayStation memory?
Honestly, I was so young when the first one came out. It came out like, what, 95?
94.
94, 10 years, eh? Yeah, okay, because I was very, very, very young, so I didn't really have any friends to play with. So I played alone often, but it caused a shit ton of fights between me and my brother. It was really bad, suffocating. He used to sit on my head. He used to push me to the side. He removed the freaking menu from the PlayStation so I wouldn't be able to play. And then my dad would be like, okay, come on, children, calm down. Then he'd take it, and then we'd both get booted. Anyways. But other than that, honestly, it was my... Like, I used to play a lot of, like, Nintendo and Super Nintendo, but PlayStation, the first one, was really my defining console. I mean, I played everything on it. All the fighting games, like Tekken... racing games, Wipeout, the sci-fi one, you know, like on a hover thing, and you're like, techno music. And then there's Ridge Racer, fucking Crash Bandicoot, which I can still play, and I can still beat the shit out of it in very little amount of time. I played it not long ago.
Whoa.
good memories. So fights, fun, intro to video games, big time. That was me.
Sweet. Allie?
Sorry about that. Well, PlayStation 1 was the first actual, like, console I owned. I didn't own, like, an N64. I didn't own anything like that. I had handhelds. Like, I had Game Boys and stuff. Mm-hmm. But my parents bought me a PlayStation 1 when I think I was about 10. And I was obsessed with it. We got it when we were staying in the States at our summer place. And I literally brought it onto the deck with me. Like, I brought the TV outside and put it on the deck. And I played in our screened-in porch. When I was very young, and I remember having to fight with my cousins. I don't have siblings, so I had to fight them off with, like, a stick to, like, get my playtime. But the PlayStation 2, that was, like, my big one. I actually wrote an essay for my parents to convince them to buy it for me. I had all my arguments.
Do you still have it?
I probably do somewhere. I think my dad kept it. But I had all my arguments written out. I had, like, bullet point facts, everything. Like, they were so impressed that they actually bought it for me.
And good, so that's good kind of, for you. Good yeah, that's, for you.
That's funny.
That's awesome.
You have
that's
to find awesome. That letter. Please find that
yeah,
letter.
We need to publish that letter.
It's for sure my dad has it folded up and, like, kept somewhere. But that was, like, I fought for that console because I had so much fun with PlayStation 1, and I just, I still have my PS2. It's still hooked up. Like, I still go back and play games on it. It's just, it's one of my favorites.
Sweet. So. Steffi, how about you?
I had one of my friends down the street. I would always go over to her house because she had a PlayStation, and then I had, like, an N64. So whenever we hung out, we would always, like, glued to the TV on the console. But I definitely remember playing, like, Tomb Raider and Crash Bandicoot and, like, fighting with her two younger brothers. A lot of fighting going on with everyone here with, like, cousins and whatnot. But, yeah, definitely really loved the PlayStation. We definitely spent, like, way more time over at her house than we did my house. But it was really great kind of experiencing that since I'm an only child with other people. Really liked it. And then definitely, like, the Final Fantasy games, I loved playing those as well, and they definitely inspired me to, like, get into cosplaying when I learned about cons, so a lot of great memories surrounding PlayStation.
Have you ever cosplayed a Final Fantasy character?
Yes, Aerith is, my go-to. Sweet. I cosplayed as her forever. Still have it in my closet.
Awesome. Jay, how about you?
So I actually have
is that your dog?
well, that's a dog that does not want me to talk. I was lucky enough to experience all those consoles. So I have several PlayStation experiences. I would say if I had to pick one, I couldn't even pick one. I have to pick two. So one, obviously, Grand Theft Auto Vice City. I played the Grand Theft Auto 1s and 2, and I played Grand Theft Auto 3, obviously, which was, you know, amazing. But Vice City, I was born in the 80s. I used to watch Miami Vice, so it was something about that game, the setting, the characters, the story. It was part Vice, Miami Vice, part Scarface, part, you know, like, it had all these little tidbits, elements of Hollywood, and I got to play those, right? And I remember just, you know, emotion, right? Like, the radio station emotion. I had to go track down, an old CD where they had the host and intertwined with the music, and I rebuilt the entire station on a disc so aww, I could listen it in my car when I was driving. Like, that's how Vice City to me, and it still is, you know, a top three gaming experience all time. It's that game. I could, if Rockstar says tomorrow, we're doing a HD remaster of Vice City, and it's like $200, I will give $500 to have it, like, tomorrow. So, like, that is a game that I really, really, truly love and played on PlayStation 2. The other one, it's a little bit out of the left field, I guess, but I'm playing on PS3, Heavy Rain. Heavy Rain, to me, like, I've always been into narrative gaming, and for me, that one was so special, not because of the technology or whatever the features were. It was really the story, but it was around child predators, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know, being a dad myself, that game really struck my heart, like, really bad, because when I was playing the game and they couldn't find the children and whatever, you know, I would really freak out. I would pause the game because I couldn't continue. I would cry. Like, I cried. That game made me cry so much because of the themes. And then, you know, the different endings that you can get at the end, and some of them really upset me. So I had to go and replay the game again and get that right ending to so it doesn't fuck up with my head. Sorry for the F word. But, you know, like I really, really had to go and play it. You know, one of the, I don't know if you guys played it, and I hope I don't spoil anything, but, you know, one of the endings, basically, the dad, you know, doesn't manage to live with his choices and end up hanging himself in the prison cell. And, you know, being a dad myself, seeing that and interacting with it, it was really something that a lot of people just, you know, I guess they didn't really understood because of the subject matter that it was. But being a dad and having this fear of losing my child somewhere and never see him again, that's something that Heavy Rain just like, whoa, you know, like took my brain, it squashed it, it rebuilt it and re-squashed it again, took my heart, rip it apart. It was, well, you know, when it's funny because when you say video games are really truly experiences and they can really either teach you or make you feel or whatever, Heavy Rain is my best example of that, you know, to make you smile, to make you cry, to make you really angry, to pause the game and be angry at your choice that you made. That's, to me, it's a masterpiece of a video game, and not just to play it, but narratively, and such an intelligent way of telling it as well. And it's funny because it pisses me off every time I go on the internet and then people are all looking at press X to Jason meme. You know, which, you know, it's like, all right, exaggerated, obviously.
Yeah.
But people are making fun of Heavy Rain because of that. And in my head, it's like, really? Of all what Quantic Dream built, this is your takeaway of the game? That upsets me. So there you go. I mean, if I had to pick two games, basically, if I go on an island and the only products that I can bring are PlayStation, those are the two games that I would bring with me, for sure. But I also have a cool story around PlayStation. So back in the day when the PS2 was about to launch in North America, but I don't remember when exactly it was something like the end of October, I think, October 2000. Mm-hmm. But it was already available a couple months ago in Japan, right? And it was already like crushing it. It was the console. Well, you know, watch out, Dreamcast, you know, you're not going to last, PlayStation is coming back, and whatever. So I remember basically selling all my consoles, my old consoles, and putting money aside to buy the PlayStation 2, right? And I was a big fan of the Dreamcast, and it pained me, but I had to sell my Dreamcast to put money aside to buy the PlayStation 2. So I did it, and I managed, and at the time, I think I don't even remember where I put my PlayStation 2. I think it was on like a Radio Shack or something. Because it was the only, because I said, hey, if I go to the big stores, I'm not going to get it. Might as well go to the small stores, pre-order a PS2, and really have it, right? So I went to Radio Shack, and they were like, yeah, you want a PS2? He's like, yeah, we have a couple available, because no one really cares of pre-ordering consoles here. So I was like, all right, let's go. Here's my money. Pre-order it. So, you know, I was all super excited. I was happy. I was like, yay, final PlayStation 2. Then my mom got sick. Like, really sick. So my mom doesn't live in Canada, obviously. My mom lives, well, back then she lived in Peru. Now she lives in Spain. And she got really sick. So obviously, living in a poor country, she didn't really have the resources to go to the doctor and be in the hospital getting surgery and all that stuff. So after a lot of thinking, I was like, okay, I can send money, I can help, but, you know, it's not enough, right? It's not enough. I feel like I can send more, whatever. So I basically went to the store and canceled my PlayStation 2 pre-order, take that money and send it to my mom, right? So I did the good deed, the good son deed, right? Like, I did that. I was like, all right. But I was like, fuck, now I don't have PS2. Right? So, and I was really like, you know, I did good, but at the same time, I was like, I guess I'll have to wait, right? And then I go to the store, and then I talk to the guys. I listen. I know that I pre-ordered the PS2, and I know that a lot of people might actually come, but I have to cancel my pre-order for. And then the guy's like, you know, why, whatever. And I'm like, no, because, you know, my mom got sick, and, you know, I kind of, she needs the money and whatever. So at the time, I was still in college, so, you know, I didn't have any a lot of money either. So I was like, all right. So that was it. So the guy was like, all right, you know, here's your money back and whatever. So I talked to my friends and all that stuff, and they're like, hey, you know, how you doing, and whatever. I was like, fine. you know, is everything's cool? Are you good? Yeah, it's good, and whatever. It's like, all right. So it kind of stays there, right? So PlayStation 2 is about to get launched, a couple of days and whatever. And I'm like, my God, we're talking about PlayStation 2, and then I don't have a Dreamcast anymore, and I don't have all of these consoles. I can't play video games. Like, you know, whatever. So when the console launched, basically I was surprised by a PS2 at my apartment by my friends, and they all kind of pitched in and bought a PlayStation 2 for me. And then what I found out is that it was the guy at the store that, you know, started calling, you know, a friend of a friend, and then get it together and said, hey, we need to find this guy, because he just canceled his pre-order, but he was really butthurt about it, and he's such a cool guy, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And then my friend went to see him, they got together, and he basically started this little, like, group of 5-6 people. They all pitched in, and, you know, back then, I don't remember how much, but it was a really, like, I remember putting $800 aside for the PlayStation 2. Just because, you know, expensive console, but also wanted to buy the second controller, the memory cards, and all that stuff. So it wasn't just the PS2, but it was like everything, right? Buying Gran Turismo, and I think it was Ready to Rumble at the time or whatever. So they all got together, pitched in, and bought me a PlayStation 2 on launch day. So, and they didn't tell me anything. Like, they planned this for weeks, and they just didn't say anything. And mind you, that at the time also, they were like, you know, I'm going to get a PS2 and you don't.
Oh, they were totally pulling your leg.
Like, hey, are you going to buy a PS2 now? Oh, that's right. You have no money. So they were really like, you guys are assholes. Like, really, like, whatever. But all this time, they were planning to purchase, to buy me a PS2. So, it was a cool feeling. You know, it was the end. To have the guy at the store kind of be the instigator of it as well and being part of it, that's just kind of like a cool story. So PlayStation 2 is, you know, it holds a very special place in my heart as a console. So that's my PlayStation story.
Oh, that's so nice.
So amazing.
Right in the feels.
Right? Where in the violin?
Wow.
But, yeah, but honestly, I mean, if we're talking about PlayStation, you know, I was right in the middle of the console war. But, you know, the console war without the internet, okay?
Yeah.
You know, where Dreamcast, Nintendo 64, and PlayStation 2 were literally battling each other for, you know, the gamers' money. And at the time, there was no internet. It was just the magazines and TV and word of mouth. Right?
That was parents pretty much didn't it. Understand.
No, but it was like, it to me, it's the golden age of consoles, right? Because you'll never see a console like the PS2. You know, that console lasted, they stopped production like a couple of years ago. So it lasted like 12 years? A console cycle of 12 years, you know, that's huge. Like, you'll never see a console like that anymore. The Dreamcast and its own is like, hey, you know, I'm doing all these cool stuff, but, you know, I'm not going to last very long because you can easily pirate the console.
Yeah.
But PlayStation has all this, like, yeah, the same with Nintendo, I think, opened up the doors to video games. PlayStation really expanded on it and helped a lot of video game franchises were born on PlayStation, and a lot of creative people worked on PlayStation and did branch out to other things, right? I mean, if we didn't get the PlayStation 1, we wouldn't get PlayStation 2, wouldn't get, you know, the Xbox, we wouldn't get all these cool technologies, and, you know, one thing leads to another, and I think PlayStation, like, yeah, it's. I think it's the new Nintendo in a way, right? Like, Nintendo opened up the floodgates, then PlayStation secured that as a, like, hey, this is a legit business. And then you have other people, you know, like Microsoft that are doing the thing. Nintendo and PlayStation are still doing the same thing again. So, yeah, PlayStation 2, like, that's... And it was a slick console, you know,
yeah.
It was black and blue and, you know, big pimping console, you know, like it had something to it, so.
Yeah, it actually looked, it didn't look like a toy. It really didn't look like a toy.
No.
It looked like your, well, I guess, what do you have, like, laser disc and DVD players? Well, it was a DVD player.
It was.
It's like the start of that multi tooled system, you know, where you could do other things besides play video games.
It was the first true entertainment system. Mm. When you think about it, you know, you got the NES, which is an entertainment system, but you know, it wasn't.
Well, they did that for marketing purposes.
Of course, they did. But you know, like that, you could play games on it. You could play music CDs. You could play DVDs, and you could play kick-ass games on it. Right. So that's PlayStation 2 to me. Yeah.
I'm with you there, because I got, my brother and I had a PS2, and then I moved away for university, and my parents didn't really understand the whole, like, video game thing, and they were like, what, you're just going to waste your time, no, you can't have that. So I went out and bought one, living in Montreal in their Newfoundland, I went out and bought one without them letting me do it, and they were ticked. Because they thought my grades were going to drop. They figured, you know, like all this stuff, like all I was going to do is stay home and play video games all the time. Well, lo and behold, now I think they get it because they realize that video games, one, is big money, is bigger than the movie industry, is bigger than the music industry, and that it's a passion that has grown because, you know, I was able to cultivate it playing games and now I can do things like this, right? So it's definitely a console that really inspired and really opened the doors for a lot of folks to be able to get into video games.
I remember my parents saying, okay, kids, we're going to get the PS2 because we want a DVD player, and right now that's the best DVD player on the market. And within 6 months, they had to go buy a DVD player because they couldn't unglue me from it.
That's a cool marketing experience, right?
I totally used that for the PlayStation 3 for my dad and for Blu-ray player. I was like, dude, it's the cheapest and the best Blu-ray player right now on the market, and it wasn't even for me to play. But then I started buying him, like, I made sure he got Uncharted, the first one, and 1 year for Christmas, because we're newfies and we like to hunt, I bought him one of, like, the big Game Hunter games, which came with, like, a Super Scope-inspired, like, gun, and we had to set it up for him, so we spent Christmas morning, like, shooting deer virtually, which was a lot of fun. He still doesn't get it. They still don't get the video game thing. They're like, we'll leave that to you, Leah and Doug. That's fine. But they're not as into it as Kat Ashley's dad, who's like hardcore gamer. Like, unbelievable. It's so cool.
But you know what? You rose a good point. The PlayStation 3 was the cheapest and best Blu-ray player on the market. And for the first year and a half, PlayStation 3 sales were really good, part because of the Blu-ray, right?
The console outsold the games, didn't it? The console outsold the games?
Yeah, pretty much, right? And, I remember people saying, you know, oh my God, you know, Blu-rays are so expensive, and it was at a time where everybody needed to turn HD, right? Everybody had to be going HD. And people were like, I can't afford a $2,000, $3,000 Blu-ray. I'm going to buy this console thing. And, you know, I used to work at EB Games back then in my old times. And, you know, I mean, those are the type of discussions that you would have, right? People would be like, yeah, I'm just going to come here because I want the Blu-ray. And then boom. And then, oh, you play games as well? Yeah, you would go, oh, really? You can play games? It's like, yes. It's a video game console. So, but for a long time. So that's another win.
Do you remember that flame war between Xbox having HD DVD and Sony having PlayStation having Blu-ray, and like the war wasn't even console, it was different mediums. But do you remember what won? The reason I'm gonna ask you all now, do you know why we ended up with Blu-ray instead of HD DVD?
Porn.
You got it. You get a pizza. Can you believe it?
They say porn. The internet is for porn, but really every mass market broadcast is for porn.
Yeah. Really hilarious. So yeah, it's definitely Sony is and the PlayStation has definitely been through the trenches and definitely made his mark on history in video gaming. See how my dog has entered the screen? Yeah. He's welcome to Meet Bowie. He's now made an appearance on the podcast. The first time.
Okay, my boyfriend just walked by too, so we're meeting everyone today.
It's all good. It's all good. It's a party. We have a podcast. It's a legit party.
It's a hangout.
Yeah, cool.
Legitimately.
I want to know, since your dad was a huge gamer, did you always get the consoles when they came out? Or
yes. Like, yes. When I can remember, yeah. I mean, I wasn't alive when the SNES came out or the NES came out. So I think even I wasn't alive when, or I was just barely born when Genesis came out, but we had all those.
You're making me feel old.
Yeah, you're making me feel freaking old.
Yeah,
so. I'm not going to comment on that.
So yeah, I grew up with everything, and I was very lucky because that was a huge part of my childhood, and I got to play a lot of systems that a lot of people my age never got to play, like the Dreamcast. Like, most, I don't know how old I was, like, most 8-year-olds don't play that. 8-9-year-olds, you know? Crazy Taxi and shit.
No, so, probably not.
Very lucky, very happy. That's bad.
Cool.
My mom hates video games, just by the way.
Your mom, yeah, it's that one thing, right?
She goes, look at your father talking about the video games again, and then while we're discussing it together, so.
One day we have to have your dad on the podcast.
Yes, I was actually going to mention that we should, he would talk your ear off, though. We'll just sit there silent, and I'll just go.
That's quite all right. I'm sure we'll have, like, tons of questions to ask him, because it's actually kind of rare to find somebody, you know, a parental figure from back in, you know, like, when the consoles first came out that was, like, so into it, right? Because usually the people that are so into were the kids, the boys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My papa.
Cool, cool. So, we covered all the topics, which is pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm.
But we do have some listener questions or some fan questions, some folks that left us some comments on Facebook. I got to make sure that I pronounce his name correctly. Jed Carandang asked us, what PS1 games you would like to see remastered, if you could see any of them remastered? So, Cat SD, do you have any?
No, Cat.
Well, for me, the PS1 was for Final Fantasy, and they're all being, like, remade, so I'm good, thanks.
Can I
get FF8 on this?
The first Resident Evil.
Resident
or Cool Borders would be fun. Or Cool Borders. Or Ghost Storm.
Well, aren't they remaking the first Resident Evil?
Are they?
Second, isn't it?
I didn't hear about the one.
I believe the first Resident Evil on PlayStation 1 has been remastered in HD.
Oh my god.
Where?
Google.
That's kind of epic.
Working on right now? I thought it was 2. I guess not, though.
No, you know why? Because, you know that scene in the first Resident Evil when, like, the creepy zombie turns around in slow-mo and then starts running after you?
Yes.
That is what people have been talking about, saying, oh my god, I have to relive that in HD. So
I have to Google that, I'm sorry. That is amazing. Wow. Okay.
Yes.
Only, or are they? It's not gonna be an exclusive, is it?
What stats did you find, Kat?
GameSpot 1 hour ago. Resident Evil remakes gets release date.
So when is releasing?
Remake of Capcom's horror classic Resident Evil will be coming to almost every platform late next month. January 20th. So,
wow.
Cat A, January 20th, you're sick from school.
Semester starts, tabagnush.
Oh yeah, I forgot to preface this podcast that some French is gonna get thrown out there.
Oh wow!
I said Manette a few times.
I know you did. It's a much better word than controller.
Wow, that is really awesome news. I can't believe that.
I think we just made Cat's night.
Yeah. I can't think anymore.
And let's make sure that people know this was not planned.
No,
it's
planned.
It's not staged. All right, like it's not.
Yeah. No.
She's in shock right now.
Well, it's because I was just thinking that the other day. Shit, son. Anyways, okay, carry on. Continue on the conversation. I'll just sit here and think.
Allie, what would you like to see remastered?
Well, Kat already said it. The Final Fantasies were really big for me, and they're slowly working their way through that, so that's kind of cool. I think maybe, like, Chocobo's Mystery Dungeon. I would like to see. I know they came out with ones for like the DS and the Wii,
mm-hmm.
but Chocobo's Dungeon 2 was a game I really liked, and I'd like to see that remade. Because that was like my first experience with like randomly generated dungeons.
Look at Jay's face. He's like...
No, listen. I will complete that thought when you're done.
Okay, and maybe Chocobo Racing, because I really like...
Yes!
Apparently.
Yes! Yes! Chocobo Racing! That's what I want! Oh my god, Allie. Holy crap. When you said Chocobo, I was like, wait, is she... This is not the right Chocobo game.
I was getting there.
Oh my god. Yes,
yeah,
Chocobo Racing. Chocobo Racing, please.
That would be amazing.
Oh
amazing.
My god. 24... Like, open world Chocobo Racing.
An HD.
Like, The Crew, but with Chocobos instead.
With adorable Final Fantasy characters.
Go, Jay. Go get that license and make that DLC happen.
Oh my god.
I'm pretty sure Eidos Montreal is in walking distance. Are
Go
they
knock at their door.
We
will give you money. Here, take my money.
Hi. I'm from Ubisoft, and I want you to make Chocobo Racing open.
Oh, man. Yeah, those are two that I'd really like to see. Original ones remade.
I'm right there with Ali. Both Chocobo games. Actually, you know what? Make a remastered collection and put both games in it.
Yeah. Yeah, there was actually, I think there was a Japanese title, too, that came out that we didn't get, or maybe more than one. So if they could localize those at the same time, that'd be great.
How about you, Steph?
You guys already mentioned everything that I could think of, so I'm not sure.
Well, I have a couple of more. I mean...
Go for it.
You know, Dino Crisis, to me, that was a cool game.
Oh my god, Dino Crisis.
You know, it's old, but I mean, like, imagine, right? Like Turok or Dino Crisis, but being remade in HD, that would be nice.
Do you think they'll make a movie with Jurassic Park, with the movie coming out? Or a game with the movie coming out? More dinosaurs? They could turn Turok into that.
I might get shot after this, what I'm going to say.
Well, if you needed to edit, you could tell me.
I'm not excited by Jurassic World at all.
Oh, really?
I'm excited for Chris Pratt.
Yeah, we're girls, we just want to look at Chris Pratt. We don't care about anything else.
I'm going to be as shallow right now as I can be, but that's the only reason why I'm excited.
Listen, much more excited about Star Wars, just saying.
We're on Team Pratt since Chubby Andy.
Oh yes.
We were into Chubby Andy. We're into muscular Star Lord, and I'm just gonna go see that movie and ignore the dinosaurs and be like, yes.
There's this cool scene when he's like in a bike and then dinosaurs are running next to him. That's like wow. Okay.
I feel like that movie is going to be a shameless, like, Chris Pratt placement movie type of thing. They're just
is that
like,
a problem?
We found a star, and let's just put it there.
No, not a problem. That's
hey,
right. I'll give my $20.
Don't make these crazy dinosaurs. 10 minutes later, you make those crazy dinosaurs.
I feel like this is their prep to get Chris Pratt ready for, like, the Indiana Jones remakes. Like, I feel like...
No, no, Seth, it pushes the limits. They're not going to remake that.
I don't like what this conversation is
about. It's been very uncomfortable.
I don't know. I'm hearing Indiana Jones and remakes, and I'm like...
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, trust me, I'm the last person who'd want to see it, but if anyone's going to do it, I think he could pull it off.
Yep.
He'd make a good Nathan Drake.
He would.
Yeah, Nathan Fillion's too old now.
Nathan Fillion would have been the good one, though. He's hot, too.
You've been listening to the Chris Pratt podcast.
Did anybody... Now, I didn't have a PS1. We were a Nintendo household. But my friend did, and I watched her play the shit out of Lunar. Did anybody play
No, I don't like that one.
I wouldn't mind seeing that remastered because I remember her playing that like day in, day out, over and over again, and I'd like to try that. And it's not one that I'd ever like. I don't have a PlayStation to go hook up and try it out, so I wouldn't mind trying that because what I remember from it, it was pretty good.
Well, if we have our PlayStation 1 retro night, I can bring it with my PlayStation.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, sweet. But then that's all we'll do. Because it's like an epic long 4-disc thing.
It's going to be so much fun.
We'll make sure we have 2 TVs. So one TV for Mario Kart so that people can play with Link, because I got the DLC. And then one TV for Leah and Luna.
We're going to need 3 TVs. What's everybody else going to play?
Mario Kart or eight-person Smash.
Eight-person Smash. We still have to make that happen at work with the 9 with the big TV screens.
Yep.
Amiibo.
Yeah. We get another question from Patrick Landry, and he wants to know, in 2014, what surprised us in video games? So we're going to go backwards this time. Steffi, did anything about 2014 in gaming surprise you?
I mean, not really. I just like to see how, like, everyone got so involved in Twitch. I feel like Twitch really blew up in 2014.
Mm-hmm,
and that surprised me for sure. It's a good thing, though.
It's pretty cool how all the consoles now have except for Nintendo, have really, like, taken ownership. And, like, you'd think that games would be ticked that, you know, people are broadcasting, you know, like, stuff that people have to pay money for in order to play and all that kind of stuff, but they're actually, like, really, like, good with it and owning it, and it's actually making the doing better for the games than, you know, it's not like it's stealing from them. It's giving them more viewers and more gamers, and it's pretty awesome.
I know personally, I like to watch like someone's Let's Plays or their Twitch streams before I actually buy a game. Mm-hmm. So that's what I do now, which I didn't used to do in the past, which is awesome.
Do you think that's more beneficial to you as a gamer or as a consumer than a trailer or a dev-guided tutorial?
Yeah, for sure. Because like some trailers are all cinematic and they make it look really awesome. And then you actually watch the gameplay, and you're just kind of like, I don't really know if I like this. Or the opposite, you could see a really awful trailer and then see someone play it, just like a normal person, and you can get really into it and say, hey, that looks like an awesome game I'd like to buy.
Cool. Jay, how about you? What surprised you this year?
I think I'm going to go with Steph as well. You know, the rise of Twitch and the streaming, I think that's something that even South Park made an episode about it yesterday. It's really taking this gaming culture to another level of really sharing and showing off the experiences and engaging with other people as well, right? Like that's pretty cool. But also, let's not forget big acquisition this year, you know, Microsoft acquiring Mojang and the Minecraft IP. That's, you know, talking with a company that has a vision and, you know, taking this humongous entertainment property that is Minecraft and basically owning it and really now saying, hey, we're acquiring this brand that has millions of followers and a very dedicated community, and the company will basically tailor that experience based on the consumer, right? Again, it comes back to having this one-on-one of video game companies and the consumers, right? Like listening to them and really listening to them and really give them what they want. You know, I know that, you know, dealing with a brand like Minecraft is going to be challenging, but it's showing that the video game industry, as with Twitch or whatever, it's really, you know, giving a voice to the consumer. Actually, not giving the voice to the consumer. I'm going to take back. It's embracing the existing voice of the consumer. I think that is where this video game industry is going now, right? Like it's listening, making the changes, and making it happen because the consumer wants it to, right? Obviously, you know, being in marketing myself and in the video game industry, sometimes it's not easy to do, and you can't really do it all the time, but this is where the industry is going, right? And consumer has always, I mean, it's funny, right? We always said the consumer is always right, right? Like, we've always worked at Depanneur or a restaurant or whatever, and it's like, the consumer is always right. And it's like, you know, but in a way, it's true, right? And in the video game industry, it's such a vocal, dedicated, passionate industry that, yeah, I mean, you know, Microsoft won't be able to do what they want with Minecraft because they're going to have a horde of angry fans after them, right? Same for us, right? Like, we have to learn how to listen to consumers and how to tailor our products and function of them. So, you know, and Twitch as well, right? I mean, it's exploding. It's something that people want to do. It's something that we're all curious to do. And, you know, even myself, when I Twitch once in a while, which I don't do often, but whenever I feel like Twitching, I do. And then it's to see that counter go to 1, 2, 3, and you're like, holy crap, I have an audience, you know? Like, it's one of those little things that is, it's so dumb on paper when you think about it. But after that, you're like, you know what? It makes sense, right? And even before Twitch, it started with YouTube, right? Like, the YouTube era really changed entertainment forever. So I think 2014 is that. It's the entertainment in gaming industry getting the capital E and really embracing it, which is really odd. Entertainment embracing. I think yeah, I'm right there with Steffi. You know, I think it's this Twitch era, this like entertainment consumption that is what is leading the industry, and it was a big topic in 2014. Obviously, I mean, not the. I'm gonna rephrase that. Actually, it's not the biggest subject of 2014, but it's certainly one of the biggest subjects of 2014, because we all know that there was a bigger, much bigger discussion, and I'm not gonna go into it. So.
Oh, we all know what that one is. Mm-hmm. Allie, how about you? Biggest surprise 2014.
I definitely agree with the whole Twitch thing. That is completely blown up. Which is amazing. And, you know, I'm finding myself having to explain it to my parents, which is different. Like, I've never really had to go into my hobbies with them. Like, they knew I was into gaming or whatever, but they just kind of left it at that. But then, like, explaining, like, streaming to them, they're still convinced that I'm doing some sort of, like, peep show. Like, they're, like...
No, you're not allowed anymore. Like, well, yeah, you got to cover up.
To them, they're like, people give you donations to sit there and play games. Like, it's to them, they're like, you have to be doing something like really gross. And I'm like, no, it's literally just that. But that's cool. And another thing that really surprised me in 2014, this is a little bit smaller. We talked about that now with the internet. We talked about it in the last podcast, I should say. Now with the internet, we know so much about games before they come out. You know, with leaks and constant marketing. One of my biggest surprises was the announcement of Overwatch. That was completely out of left field. We had no notice about it whatsoever. And all of a sudden, we had this beautiful cinematic trailer. We had, or Blizzard had a build ready to be played at BlizzCon. And it was just something completely, like, it caught everyone off guard, I think, to have, like, a game announced to them and then, like, ready to be played right then and there. And not have heard about it at all. Yeah, it was... I remember I was streaming BlizzCon, and I was, like, sitting here, and I almost fell out of my chair. Like, I really was not expecting an entirely new IP, an entirely new game. Like, that was... It was like, why didn't this leak online before? Like, why didn't someone find, you know, like, any sort of detail about this? So that was kind of cool. I like that in 2014 there are still those types of surprises, too. Yeah.
Cat Ashley?
Surprise. Well, I think Jay insinuated this, but I'm not sure. The whole social movements in gaming of GG, hashtag GG, or whatever. But
you don't have to say Gamergate. It's not a faux pas.
But yeah, so Gamergate. Actually, no, but you don't, honestly,
he got up and left. He didn't want to be in the conversation.
No, but, like, as a social scientist student, like, it's really interesting to see, like, social movements come out of something that is at the base of it, you know, primarily, like, a hobby. Was, like, whether I'm forward or not, or whatever the hell my position is. It's still very interesting to see. In 2014, it was, but I guess it has to do with the whole connectivity and everyone being able to discuss stuff online and yada, yada, yada. But, okay, what I'm really surprised at was that Bethesda didn't come out with any Fallout 4 news this
week. Somebody jaded.
Tomorrow, okay, that they're not again going to show up. Not even a Dishonored 2. So for me, that's honestly, like, yeah, I'm not happy.
But you have so many games to play.
I don't care. I don't care. I think
Catherine would throw all of her games off the roof of her building if Bethesda announced Fallout 4 tomorrow.
Except
I think she would just pick everything up and go.
Yeah. I'll sell my soul.
Yeah, that would be her life.
Come on, just give the people what they want. God darn it. Moving on. That was
Let's give the people what they want. Let's spread bread and water.
That's like the missing song from Les Miserables is give the people what they want. Fallout 4.
Fallout 4. Someone needs to make that.
Give it to us. It's in Boston. We know it's in Boston. It's going to be in Boston. Anyways, okay, continue.
Sorry. Oh, my.
Look at the rock.
Look at the happy rock.
Look at the rock.
Cat SD, how about you?
For me, it's how games are officially a thing now. Like, they're not, and we are seeing it with Gamergate, because the whole discussion is about how it needs to be more inclusive, because the representation of the typical gamer doesn't represent the typical gamer. And it's like, even the MoMA has classic games that they consider works of art, so it's not just something some kids do in their basement. It's exactly like movies and television. It's a medium, it's a movement, and the fact that we have Gamergate in this discussion is because it's getting out there, and it's big, and I'm sorry if you don't like it, but like, the Kim Kardashian Hollywood game on Facebook is part of that movement. It's part of video games. And that game shows us that more people are into games and you need to do more types of video games. And yes, more diversity means more shit, but it also means more gems. It means more Child of Lights of this world. And it's also like, if it weren't for this movement and this explosion, we wouldn't have Child of Light with a recording artist and his consultant from Cirque du Soleil. So for me, it's like, it's this whole explosion, and I think the discussion in Gamergate, even if it does, there's a lot of chaos and shit and bullshit, it's a discussion that needs to be had, because as somebody who works in traditional media, who works in television and radio, I can tell you that in these old medium, we're still having issues with representation and equality, so it needs to happen. I would be so happy to see that games do it before television and radio. I would be like, see, you made fun of me for playing video games, you called me a nerd and outcast, but it was like this movement rose and did what mediums that's been around for ages couldn't do, and that's like, stop having just white guys.
Yes, please.
Stamp of approval.
I'm nothing against white, straight white men. They need to be in the mix with everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Out with the normativity.
Cool.
Out with the boxes.
And the mold. Listen, we've been playing video games for several years, but it's still a very young industry, right? Like, there's a lot of things to learn. There are a lot of things to build. There's a lot of things to be aware of. So, you know, it's all part of evolution, right? So through evolution, through issues, you evolve and you grow and you learn new things, right? So, Catherine, what you were saying about, you know, diversification in gaming and having all these different products, and, you know, it was funny because I was having a conversation on Facebook, and I think you were part of that thread. When we were discussing about a video game or whatever, and then someone said, well, someone that plays Candy Crush is not really a gamer. I'm like, no, excuse me. It is, actually, you know? So, and then I went for it on a tirade and basically said, no, it's not because you play an iPhone game or a Facebook game that you cannot be a gamer, right? It's how the market is expanding, right? So,
and some people have put more hours into these games than I've played Skyrim, and I've played like 150 hours of Skyrim.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and
that's true.
There's people that have put like 500 hours, like I'm pretty sure Simal has like something like 500 hours of WoW since the game launched, and I'm pretty sure you could find people that have played 500 hours of Kim Kardashian Goes to Hollywood, and you know what? More power to you.
Yep.
Whatever floats your boat, as long as you're having fun.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. Cool. Well, to round it off, I guess to say that I have two things. Game surprise of the year has to be Valiant Hearts, The Great War. Because I couldn't put it down. And I bawled like a baby. And a few days after I had reviewed the game, I was asked to go on CJD with Jeff Moss and co-host The Exchange. And when we do The Exchange, he usually gives me like 50 minutes. He's like, hey, this is when we'll talk about something that you're doing with Girls on Games right now. Game that you're reviewing or something like that. What's new in the industry? So after spending an hour and 45 minutes talking about everything under the sun, from political issues to you know, social media stuff and pop culture, he said, all right, so what's the latest game you've reviewed? And I started talking about Valiant Hearts, and I started tearing up on air, which was kind of embarrassing, and I had to stop for a minute, and I said to him, look, I'm sorry, but this game is intense, and it's beautiful, and I'm not one to play war games or anything like that. I don't even like watching war movies because there's something in it that just like it just makes me crumble. And that game did it to me all over again. And yeah, it was impressive. And if you haven't played Valiant Hearts The Great War yet, do it. But get a box of tissues, okay? Okay. Then when it comes to like the industry as a whole, one of the biggest things that I've noticed this past year and I'm really starting to get into and wasn't into before is esports. Like, this is, like, legitimate, like, huge money. Like, people are paid, but, like, football players and hockey players are being paid to play video games. Like, it's awesome. And they're seriously skilled. And I sit there and just wonder, just eyeballs alight and being like, wow, these people are impressive. And then we got the chance. We had an esports event here in Montreal. Where we got to see some Call of Duty action and some Counter-Strike GO action. And it was really impressive to meet some of these players, and they're just like, I'm sorry, if you heard that squeak, that's my dog.
We kind of did.
Sorry, he is a rubber chicken that has no face anymore. But anyways, I'm taking it away from him. But yeah. Yeah. Here you go. Oh my!
It was great.
The rubber chicken with no beak, right? So yeah, esports. It's just like everybody's talking about it now. Be it, you know, like they're talking about it on TV, they're talking about it in big websites like Mashable. Like it's really gotten to be big business, and some of the biggest sporting events, even beyond what football games can take in for numbers of people sitting in the stands, just watching people play video games, like beyond just Twitch and sitting in your own house. People pay money to go sit in an arena and watch people play. That's wild. I love it. It's so cool.
But it's at heart of entertainment, right? Like it all comes down to entertainment, and we're privileged to experience that. And you know, as you get entertained by reading a book, you're entertained by listening to music, to watch a movie. Now you're entertained by playing video games and watching other people playing video games, right? So it's all in the fun.
It's been a good year. A really good year. Had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's been, you know, there's been ups and downs.
Yeah,
but at least absolutely. the conversation has been going. You know, it's the first time that I've actually been called from, you know, like to go talk on a radio station about Gamergate, about a topic that, like, you know, otherwise they wouldn't really care. So it's cool, even in the bad times, that, you know, like the voice is out there, it's on the top of people's minds. And there's still fun stuff to play, and we're still enjoying it. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Exactly. With that being said, to round off the show, like we did last week, we want to highlight some of the upcoming gaming events that are happening in Montreal, and there's some stuff happening actually really soon. in the next few days even. One of them being Girls Learning to Code Day, and that's an event brought to us by Girls Learning to Code. It's happening on December 6th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., and essentially it's a chance for young girls between the ages of 8 and 13 to go learn Ruby, and they can bring their family or guardian, parent, sister, whatever, along with them to get to learn how to code, which is really cool because, you know, if girls can go and work at Ubisoft, one of my best friends works at Ubisoft. So it's really cool that they're giving that chance to girls to go out and learn how to code at a very young age. Next, on the very next day, we have the Mini Comic Con de Montréal, which is happening at Palais de Congrès on the 7th. And I don't know a whole lot about it, but, you know, I'm sure you can get a little bit of your Comic-Con fix since we're going to have to wait until July to get the full-fledged thing. Nintendo's holding a super awesome holiday mall experience from December 8th to 21st all over Montreal and all over Canada, for that matter, where people can go and try some of the Nintendo games prior to buying them and get their hands on like stuff like Super Smash and Captain Toad, which is absolutely awesome. And last but not least, something we just learned about today is the Super Nintendo concert, which is happening on January 25th, 2015, which is a orchestra, a video game orchestra that's going to go and play Super NES music for us live. And that's really cool. Yeah. Jay is intrigued.
And it's
pretty cheap, too, for adults. It's the most expensive price, of course. It's $25. But they have, like, $10 tickets for students and seniors and all that kind of stuff. And if you buy your ticket prior to December 31st, you get a CD with music by the orchestra from NES. So that's pretty awesome. So, yeah, if you want to buy someone a nice little Christmas gift, you know, slide it in their present, in their stocking, that kind of thing. And, yeah, I think that's about it. This has been an absolutely wonderful podcast. I want to thank everybody for coming. We're going to do the roundtable so that everybody can holler out their Twitter handles. So, Jay, how can people find you?
So, well, first of all, thank you for having me. This was super fun. I think it's the first podcast that I do in 4 years or something like that. So, definitely a fun experience, so thanks a lot for having me.
No problem.
My Twitter handle is at DarthJ, so it's Darth, like Darth Vader, _ J, J-A-Y. I tweet about a lot of gaming stuff, nonsense, Raptors, Habs, different stuff. So, yeah, follow, and if there's anything that you need to know, just holler at me.
Sweet, we will do. Thank you very much for coming. We anytime you want to come on the podcast, you're welcome.
I get a catcher shoe.
Oh yeah, pretty much.
You know what? No, I already have a Shom shoe card, so I'm gonna use that one as well. So
okay.
I'm getting a collection of shoe cards. The Shom shoe card, the Girls on Game shoe card. That's great. It's awesome. Love it.
All right, Cat SD, how can people find you?
I am at CSD. ESBINS on Tumblr, Instagram, Twitter. So basically, C for Catherine, S for Smith, and DBA for DBA.
Cat A, how about you?
Fifth Element, but the T is a 7. So it's F I F T H E L E M E N 7.
Cool.
And that's on Instagram and Twitter as well. No Tumblr for me.
Allie?
You can find me at 8bitwand on Twitter, Instagram, and Twitch. And also on Tumblr, I believe. I think that's my Tumblr name as well.
Steph?
People are stealing my username. So it's either xxsteffy or Steffy Brandon. And I'm on Tumblr, Instagram, YouTube, Twitter, everything like that, Twitch.
Sweet. And I'm Leah Jewer on Twitter and Instagram. And then if you want to find us as a collective whole, we are on Twitter as The Girls on Games, on Facebook as The Girls on Games, on Instagram as Girls on Games, and of course you can always go to girlsongames.ca and find absolutely everything.
Girls, so, girls, girls, girls.
Sound like our sounder from Shome.
Yeah.
Sweet. All right, well, thank you so much, everybody, for joining us. Thank you for listening. We love your comments, your questions. Please feel free to send us more. We love it. And we'll see you next time. We're going to try and broadcast even more frequently because this is just way too much fun. All right. See y'all later. And Jay is dancing. This podcast is awesome. All right. See y'all later.